And still on science, because Australian researchers believe they've made an important breakthrough in the international race to develop a universal malaria vaccine. On the back of successful clinical trials on mice, the vaccine developers hope to begin phase one human trials in the next 6 to 12 months. Malaria kills more than 1 million people each year, the vast majority of them young children under 5, and previous attempts to find a silver bullet solution to attack the malaria parasite have failed. And this potential vaccine was discovered really only by chance late last year. And the man who did it, the lead researcher, Professor Michael Good, he's the head of Griffith University's new Laboratory of Vaccines for the Developing World, which officially opens today on the Gold Coast. Dr. Good, congratulations. Welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thank you very much.
Why has a universal malaria vaccine proved so elusive to scientists over the years?
Because really people haven't determined how to induce the right type of immune response that can target all the different parasite strains. The malaria parasite is like a moving target. Every individual parasite in every person is essentially a little bit different. And previous attempts to develop a vaccine have really tried to find the silver bullet, as you refer to it, as by inducing an antibody response that would recognize a surface protein. Now, the parasite's very clever at changing those proteins. Over the last 10 years, though, we've become increasingly aware that the parasite is, in fact, vulnerable. And it's vulnerable to a very different type of immune response that can be induced only by exposing the body to low doses of the whole organism, the whole malaria parasite. And when we do that, we find that a class of lymphocytes called T cells are induced, and they're very effective at recognizing all strains. In other words, what the T cell recognizes doesn't change from parasite to parasite. But the real problem for us was over those last 10 years, we didn't really know how to translate that knowledge into a vaccine. And it's only over the last 9 months, I think, as you suggested, that I stumbled upon a new technique to actually put the parasite to sleep. My research colleague, Terry Spittle, at La Trobe University, made me aware of a new class of drug which can bind the DNA of the parasite, and he thought it would kill the parasite. Well, we tested to see whether that drug would bind the parasite, but what we found was it didn't actually kill it. It actually put it to sleep, and that's very important. So the parasite can be treated in the laboratory, in the test tube. It essentially goes to sleep, and then we inject very low doses of that sleeping parasite into the body, and that stimulates the type of immune response that we've shown in the past can recognize and kill all strains of the parasite.
So
that's been the genesis of a discovery, the knowledge that a low dose is important, and stumbling upon this new chemical that Terry put me in touch with, so to speak.
And you're hoping to start human trials within a year?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the technology is actually very simple. With the human parasite Plasmodium falciparum, we can easily, and we do grow that in the laboratory now, it'll be a very simple measure to simply mix that parasite growing in the test tube with this drug. It'll bind the DNA of the parasite. The parasite will be put to sleep. Importantly, it won't wake up also, that's important. And then we'll inject low doses of that parasite into human volunteers to see whether we can induce the same type of immune response in humans that was shown as very successful in mice.
So how long would it be before, should those trials prove successful, before it gets to market?
Well, you go through a series of phases, phase 1, 2 and 3. The phase 1 trial is mostly about safety, but we'll also be able to determine whether there is an immune response induced in a small number of people. That might take 6 months, that trial, from the start to the finish. Then we'll go to a larger trial involving several hundred people, and then if successful, several thousand people. So it has to go through that rigorous process, and that's only fair and proper, but that could take 5 years.
Those subsequent trials are the ones where it's really expensive. You haven't had drug companies involved so far.
No, we haven't had them involved yet. The National Health and Medical Research Council of Australia has funded my research to date, and we have sufficient funding for the early phase one trial. Once we move beyond that, we'll be looking for other sources of funding, whether from drug companies or from philanthropic donors.
What are the opportunities and concerns involved about having it privately funded by the commercial sector?
Well, this is something I've been working on for 27 years, and I want to sort of make sure that our discovery, if successful, goes all the way to actually potentially eliminating malaria. So in other words, I want to make sure that what we've discovered here can be put into practice. And therefore, I want to make sure that whoever takes or funds this particular trial in the future understands the importance of the situation and has the same sort of motivation that I have.
I mean, is it possible that a drug company which was motivated purely by profit would take your work, even if it's proven to be successful, but hang on to it because they say have other less effective but more profitable malaria treatments?
I think that's theoretically possible. Yeah, I hope that wouldn't happen, but they're the sort of things that you sort of would have in the back of your mind. But I've dealt with a number of drug companies in the past, and they've been very good to deal with, but they have different agendas, and my agenda is to develop this vaccine, which will be able to be a benefit to people in poor countries.
And you head the new Laboratory of Vaccines for the Developing World, officially opening today. Tell me about that.
Well, it's as you described, Laboratory of Vaccines for the Developing World. Since I was a medical student, I've been interested in diseases in poor countries and in immunology and vaccinology. So I've been very fortunate to be able to put those together and launch this laboratory. We have another vaccine which is also advanced near phase one clinical trials to prevent rheumatic heart disease, which is a major problem in our indigenous population. And we hope to get that into a human trial. Well, the preliminary work's already started, but hope to get into a human trial within the next 6 months as well. So we have those two major vaccine programs for malaria and rheumatic heart disease.
Is that the one caused by the streptococcal?
Correct, yep.
And is it true?
The same germ that causes school sores or tonsillitis.
And am I right in saying Indigenous Australians suffer the highest rates of streptococcal-related
yes,
diseases?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. They have the highest rate of streptococcal-related illnesses in the world. In some remote communities, 80% of young children have streptococcal skin infections, and they can go on, they do go on, to cause rheumatic fever and rheumatic heart disease in a significant number of people.
Why is it so high among Aboriginal populations?
It's a very good question. I think rheumatic fever and streptococcal skin diseases relate to people with the lowest socioeconomic levels and status, and it's a disease of poverty, really. And that's you see that around the world in poor countries, diseases like streptococcus and malaria are very common.
Well, important work for Australia and important work for the world. Tell me, Professor Good, you've been working for so long, particularly in the malaria field. That work must be rewarding in and of itself, but, you know, there's no guarantee that these successes will come along. Tell me about the moment when you reach these milestones. It must be incredibly exciting.
Well, you can think, you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of these things happen, what I call serendipitously. You're not really expecting them, but you have to have an open mind. I can certainly recall a number of events in my working life, and working in Africa and working in America and working here in Australia, where just major things have happened. And it really sort of excites you. It keeps you awake at night time. It makes you excited to get to work and get to the laboratory in the morning. And so this is one of those moments. I haven't been as excited about malaria research in my entire life over the last few months.
Back to it, Professor. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Michael Good, the head of the Griffith University's new Laboratory of Vaccines for the Developing World. It's 9 to 7 on ABC Radio National Breakfast.